listeners, for over a year and a half and for dozens of news stories, we've taken you behind the headlines. We've encouraged you to read between the lines to make sure you truly understand the news about medical studies and the results. And this morning, you'll understand even better why that's so important. We have in the studio with us this morning one of our returning physician experts, Dr. Sharon Brangman, professor of medicine and geriatrician, and our go-to person for topics relating to Alzheimer's disease. Good morning, Dr. Brangman.
Good morning.
So let me start with an overview of this news story so our listeners get the gist, and then you and I are going to dissect it so we don't misunderstand it. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Good. So listeners, a report was issued this week in the Journal of Neuroinflammation about an 81-year-old male patient who was injected in his neck directly into his spine with a drug called etanercept, also called Enbrel, and showed remarkable cognitive improvement within 10 minutes. The study was done by a group of scientists from UCLA. The patient was a retired doctor who, prior to receiving the injection, was unable to tell what state he was living in, know what year it was. He was giving some basic math to do, asked to identify some pictures of everyday objects, all kinds of tasks, and he scored very poorly. But within 10 minutes after receiving the injection, he knew he lived in California. He stated that the year was 2006, although it was really 2007. He was able to list the objects. I found it interesting, even when he made a few minor mistakes. Now, listeners, as you know, my keen interest in this horrible disease is because my mother suffers from it. So you can only imagine how excited I was to hear a story that Alzheimer's might have been reversed. However, my clearer head prevailed, knowing it was important to look behind this headline, and that's why I contacted Dr. Brangman. She's going to help us sort us out. And what do you make of this report?
Well, I take it with a lot of mixed emotions because I know how devastating this disease is and everyone is looking for that cure.
Yes.
But I also know from the scientific perspective that cures don't happen immediately. And whenever I hear of somebody having a miraculous response after a few minutes, I get a little skeptical. Now, there is some good science that is the basis of this treatment.
There is.
And so there is some information here that sounds like it has value. So the medication that they're using helps to reduce inflammation.
And Enbrel is something that is given to people with what? Rheumatoid arthritis.
Right. Rheumatoid arthritis is a disease which involves a lot of inflammation. We do know that the brain cells that are involved in Alzheimer's disease do go through an inflammatory process, so that anti-inflammatory medications may be playing a role. And that's actually the basis of some medications that are now working its way through the system that may be available in the next year or so.
Okay.
However, this drug is a little bit different because it was injected into the neck, directly into the fluid that surrounds our brains.
Mm-hmm.
And then within a matter of minutes, this person was supposedly better.
Which just is amazing. And as I read the reports, I understand his family was sitting in another room, and all of a sudden they felt as if they'd gotten their father and grandfather back. I mean, they really were overwhelmed by the experience. But there are some question marks about the report and about how it took place, aren't there?
Yes, there are. Well, this article was based on one person.
Yeah.
And in the scientific world, we hesitate to make broad statements about a response in one individual person.
I would think so. Has it been injected, do you know, in other people?
I'm not aware of it. It's very possible that it has, but it hasn't been published.
I see.
It's also published in a journal that I'm not immediately familiar with.
Okay.
And each journal has their own standards as to what they will print and what they won't. And some journals will not print a story until there have been many, many patients in the trial period.
And so, as huge as this seems, I would have expected to read it more like in New England Journal of Medicine or one of the more well-known journals. It wasn't there.
Exactly. And those journals look at everything with a lot of scrutiny,
mm-hmm.
and some journals don't have that same level of scrutiny. And so that's another red flag.
Okay. I also tell patients when they're talking about news stories, follow the money. And there is an element of that here, isn't there?
Well, this doctor has a private research organization.
Mm-hmm.
He does have credentials that say UCLA, but if you read a little closer, he's actually in a private research group.
Okay, and they could stand to profit from this working, couldn't they?
There could be profit at any level of the treatment,
mm-hmm.
Or of the study, so it's very hard for us to say.
Were there any other red flags within this one experiment itself that you saw?
Well, it sounds like this patient had typical Alzheimer's disease, but my first reaction would be, was this really Alzheimer's disease? Was there any other psychiatric issues going on? Was there anything else that we could discern about this patient? Because what we're trying to do is figure out if the symptoms this patient had are identical to what the typical Alzheimer's disease patient has.
I see. Well, one of the things I know with any of these kinds of news reports is that they are so hopeful when you read the headline, but you really do have to dissect the story itself to make sure that it would be valid or that it would apply to you in either way, wouldn't you?
That's true. And even though this medication is being used for rheumatoid arthritis, it's not approved for this use.
Mm-hmm.
So a doctor cannot use it. It would be considered off-label use,
mm-hmm.
which has a lot of serious implications. So we have to make sure that even though this medicine is available for other treatments, it is appropriate to use in patients with Alzheimer's disease.
Very good. We really do need to stand by for the future answers, don't we?
I think that there is hope on the horizon.
Very good. Well, Dr. Sharon Brangman, thanks so much for helping us go behind this very eye-opening headline.
You're welcome.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. Reducing team conflict, increase healthies and happies, or who the heck were Sharif and Sharif? Last November, my friend Brent and Annette's kid and Bob and Eva's kid were in the sectional championship playoff soccer game. I went. A gorgeous day, unexpectedly balmy, clear, windless, and what a game. Healthy kids with fierce, wonderful energy charging after the ball, feet, legs, elbows flying, knocking each other's bodies this way and that, shouting, grunting, driving as a team relentlessly to the goal. When I was a kid, nobody even knew the rules of soccer. But most amazing now was these kids were named Allegra, Rebecca, Susie, Jenna, Makita. They were girls. When I grew up, everybody knew girls couldn't play sports. But we changed that stereotype thinking, and what a glorious boon to girls' health and everybody's lives. Now, 15 years ago, I told stories in my son's first grade class. I bumped them this way and that with the twists and turns of my little real-life dramas. They laughed, screamed in all the right places. We delighted in each other. But I always had a sad feeling on these visits. My son went to city schools, so most of these little guys and gals were African-American. And I could never get out of my head that a big percentage wouldn't graduate high school, and a lot of boys would end up in jail or dead from drive-by shootings and drug wars. And if they made it to adulthood, their chances of chronic health problems, disability, premature death from disease would be much higher than for whites. The cost of stereotypes and the stress that goes with them. These same little kids beaming up at me, begging for more stories. Too big a problem to solve, you say? Nah. We're doing it for gender more than we ever thought possible. Why not color, too? And a classic psych experiment points the way. A group of boys at a summer camp were randomly split into two groups, given different team names, encouraged to notice differences between the teams. Tensions rose. Boys from different teams did not like each other. Fights broke out. Next, the experimenters, Sharif and Sharif, gave both groups a major problem they'd have to cooperate on to solve. They'd have to focus on what they had in common instead of superficial differences. They did. Tensions dropped. No more fighting, goodwill, cooperative charging to that goal together. So next time we're tempted to target somebody of a different color, gender, or whatever stereotype difference, notice our subsurface similarities instead and send our energy toward the common goals on the biggest team of all, the human being team. Happy Martin Luther King Day, everybody. I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.